Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on a Wild West Country Gold Monday. Those are heady days, those highlights. Byron Leftwich's
debut. Wilford made the grab.
Exciting times, right?
What game was that?
That was Buffalo.
Okay, gotcha.
I believe that was Buffalo, yeah.
Okay. I missed that era.
I know you did, but Byron Tony, remember, he let him down the field. It was like last second thing. It was literally final snap of the game. Clock goes to zeros, and he hit Wilford in the back of the end zone.
I was at a local sports bar where there were five or six Buffalo fans, and
Like
there
13?
Was, I thought there was going to be a brawl. I
honestly might have been 13.
I thought that there was about to be trouble in that bar because all the Jaguars fans in the place started chanting instead of for Jacksonville at the six Buffalo fans that were in the front of this room, and like the people who worked at the bar had to come get them and get them out of the room before anything happened.
Were there a chance of how Baselli made Bruce Smith look overrated? Was
no.
that taunting involved on
no,
that day?
It was more you suck, and I mean it was escalating as the 2 minutes went on after that game ended, and finally someone got him out of there.
Well, we went from that, John. We did our Friday top five was the top five worst draft selections in team history. I was honestly surprised how many people put Byron Leftwich in the top five worst picks.
No.
He won one of the five worst picks of this team. I think they look back and they say,
he started,
what could you have had?
Right?
Far from the worst pick, but at least in my opinion. But
no, he had games where he was functional and played well in the playoffs 1 year with him, right?
Yeah,
I
think what people look at that, well, you could have drafted Terrell Suggs and taken Ben Roethlisberger the next year. Well, yeah, you could have if you knew exactly
you judge
what was going to happen.
Every pick on what you could have done in the next 10 picks, very few picks would look that good.
Right, and maybe Mark Brunell leads him to 10 wins instead of Byron playing, and then you're not in position to draft Ben Roethlisberger. You never know, right?
Yeah, I mean, I understand it's fun to play what if in the draft, but
we got two more months of it.
Yeah,
you better enjoy it, pal.
Even looking back, but Byron he was not one of the worst five picks in franchise history.
No, I would agree with you. David Garrard didn't agree with you, however, he threw him in the. Dave was going after all his former teammates on Friday. It was great. It was fantastic. Good stuff.
Cat fight.
So back from Indy for the scouting combine. This is the time of year where all the pundits tell you, at least from my vantage point, the pundits tell you that the combine's overrated. It's all about the film. It's all about the film, 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 film. And then these guys go out and they either overperform or underperform expectations, and they're all backpedaling saying, well, we're going to have to go back and watch the film again.
Right.
Did the film change? I don't think the film changed. Clearly, opinions change based on the performance in Indy. Now, maybe smart teams' opinions don't change nearly as much, and maybe the changes are gradual, or you're trying to look for confirmation. But clearly, guys do get...
The middle thing you said was
right. What? What was the middle thing? I said a lot of things.
The gradual. You can see guys who can maybe, if you're in the later rounds, improve a round or two at the most. But for the most part, I think most fans get it, that the combine is a tool. It is a really cool thing for the fans to watch and get caught up on what's going on. And I think GMs and scouts generally look at it, and I think Mayock says it best, that when you see something that strikes you as off scale, so to speak, if a guy runs a lot faster than you thought he was going to, it gives teams a sort of, think of a legal pad, and they write stuff down, okay, check this, check this, check this. It gives teams something to go back and check to see if what they were seeing was right or if there's something else they need to see in a player. Generally speaking, I don't think you see a guy go from third round to first round because of the combine, but they can solidify themselves, they can bring clarity to their situation. Solidifying themselves is what happens more than anything at the combine.
Although, look, I do think, guys, whether it's third round or first round, I certainly, 20 spot move could drop you out of the first round into the second round, what have you. And I do think there's, some of that does go on with teams. Like you get Max Williams, right? The tight end in Minnesota. Didn't have any kind of eye-popping athletic workout,
right?
Just okay. But he's considered the consensus number one tight end out there. His game film apparently is very good with the Golden Gophers. But now I hear, you know, he was being speculated, could he be a top 15 pick if he worked out well? Well, why if he worked out well? I mean, if you're going to go back,
yeah, that's wonder who's doing that speculating.
I mean, well, that's true. That's a
always
good point too.
You know, the thing to remember. I think the best example, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, but the wide receiver from Michigan,
Devin Funchess this year.
Yeah, he ran back to back 4.7s.
Yeah, Devin Funchess.
So it probably puts him more as a tight end because of his size,
which a lot of people thought maybe. Speak.
So. That, I think, is a lot of what happens at the combine. Okay, is this guy's speed where we thought it was? 4.7, 4.7, okay. He's going to have to do something in his pro day to prove to us that that's not his speed. So, yeah, they more pigeonhole him. Okay, tight end, this is what he is, this is what he is. The medical and the interviews, especially the medical, is the big thing with the combine because teams get a chance to get their doctors face-to-face with these guys really for the only time for some of them. So that's really where most NFL people find their biggest value is that they can, the Jameis Winston test, for, you know, they can get their hands on the guys and see where they really are physically.
Yeah, well, certainly the medical and those interviews seem to be by far the most important, but I do think the physical workouts, whether they want to admit it or not, do impact decision makers more than they'd like you to believe. Because to me, again, if you got to go back and check the tape to see if what I really saw was real, well, how good a job did you do watching the tape the first time?
Well, I think a lot of times you're talking about GMs doing that as much as anything. And GMs, a lot of them, haven't gone into every player in this draft yet before the combine. You know, the scouts have, the front level, you know, the guys on the ground have. But again, it gives guys on guys you're targeting and guys that you know are in your wheelhouse, it gives them more information to go check on.
All right, we will take your calls today if you want to talk about the combine, anything you saw over the weekend, which prospects stood out to you, good or bad, which ones caught your eye. From a Jaguars perspective, not just necessarily with the third pick overall, you can weigh in as always at 641-1010, the fan feedback spotlight today. Simply ask you, whose NFL combine performance impressed you the most this year? We've already gotten a variety of responses to that, so you can weigh in whether it's somebody you think should be on the Jaguars radar or not, who caught your eye from a positive standpoint, or if you want to weigh in and who failed to live up to their reputation, whether it was physically or otherwise, over the last few days in Indianapolis. We'll take your calls on that as well. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. As John knows very well, it's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's the reason he's back in Jacksonville live today at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, Jaguars today, just getting started on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, glad you're along with us. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here. Let's get back in the swing of things. Johnny O back in the 904 area code.
You can't play that song on a Wild West Golden Guns Monday.
Can you not?
Monday.
Cherry Bomb?
This is a happy little ditty.
It is. What are you suggesting?
You got to go raw with a Wild West Golden Monday. You got to have a guitar.
You can't even say it. I'm sure there's a guitar being played in
this
song.
Yeah, you got to crank it out a little bit.
Okay.
It's Wild West Golden Guns Monday.
Guns and Gold.
All right.
You'll get it right one of these weeks or months. While you were gone, one of our listeners tweeted his co-host rankings, and he had you in the number one spot.
Until?
Until Garrard on Friday, he had him pass it, but he had you. He had, I want to say, you, Dave, Loggeman in third, anyone else in fourth, and Rhino Halloran was in fifth. So it's good for Ryan. He made the top five, which was nice. And I guess Mark Long and several others got lumped into anyone else. But today, in response to the question of the day, which is whose combine performance impressed you the most, he said most impressive combine performance was John Osier. I was disappointed with J.P. Shadrick, fourth rounder at best. See? And going in, he was probably a solid to mid-third rounder, and here he is now all the way down in the fourth round.
I'd like to thank my cousin for writing in.
You're welcome. Very Mike, nice Mike Tishone, getting a lot of love. He's the unofficial ranker of Jaguars today. You were saying, as we went to break, or on the break, you said you think Jag fans are going to be disappointed with free agency this year.
I think they're going to be disappointed if they're, I get so many emails sort of with the wish list. And it's the number one guy at every position.
What's wrong with that?
Right. And that's great to want. It's just not realistic. And I think there's going to be so many guys go off of the market before it opens that I think there's going to be a feeling in the first couple of days when they sign guys who they're targeting and who they believe will help. There's going to be a feeling of, but it's not the guy that I've been thinking of for the last 2 months.
Right, but don't you think if Jason Pierre-Paul, for instance, if he's one of your wish list guys,
right,
and he gets franchised, that's not, I mean, maybe you're disappointed in the sense, oh man, I wish he was available. I think there's a lot more disappointment if there's a guy like Randall Cobb available and the Jags don't seem to make a play for him. That, to me, would be very disappointing.
Okay, right.
As opposed to if he's not available, what can you do?
I don't think that'll... I mean, I think there's also the very real possibility that they go after guys they don't get. You know, you're not going to get guys... You're not going to get every guy you go after, even if you throw... And they're going to have to overspend and outspend people to get them and to get on the radar. But even with that, there's a chance they might get. So I just think there's going to be a little bit of a, why didn't they? They're going to try. They're going to go after people, and they're going to get guys, and they're going to improve themselves. But I don't think it's going to be, judging by my emails, there is an expectation level that I'm not sure any team can reach in free agency.
Well, part of the problem being that the salary cap continues to rise.
Right.
And there are a lot of teams with cap space out there. Now, not a lot of teams in the Jaguars' neighborhood. And, in fact, nobody within $10 million. But if you have $64 million, as some projections show the Jaguars having, or $54 million, as the Raiders have, you can do anything you want with $54 million, right? You're not going to offer $10 million more a year to Randall Cobb than the Oakland Raiders would, for instance.
Right.
Couple of guys. Now, there are different levels of disappointment. Certainly, all those are things that can lead to disappointment.
And I know them all.
Right. So, particularly our wives probably know it better than anybody. But when you have the disappointment of, so-and-so got franchised. That's one thing. It's kind of out of your control. It's also out of your control to a degree. The Jags may lay the best offer on the table to a guy, and he opts for whatever combination of reasons to either stay where he knows it's better, or he feels he has a better chance to get to the Super Bowl sooner, whatever the case. And
I guess my point is, I don't think March
10th,
11th,
yeah,
is going to be a press conference in the West Club
celebratory
with Sue, Balaga, Cobb, Des. I mean, it's I do some of the emails I get that it's going to be 1, 2, 3, the top guy on Roto World's list will be walking in this door on March 11th. You know, that isn't realistic. I think they're going to pursue hard 2 or 3 guys, and I think they'll get a couple of those guys, and then there'll be some guys that they get who are third on these internet lists that the Jaguars really like a lot, that some people are going to go, why'd they go after that guy? But the realities don't always meet the pre-free agent expectations.
Well, Brennan Williams is in the fold now, so they're pretty much set at right tackle, I would imagine.
I've gotten some emails angry about that signing.
See,
that's
the thing. I understand if they go out and sign this guy and that's the only move they make at right tackle.
I can't believe that will be the case.
I don't either. But if it were to be the case.
Has anybody ever said that's the case?
No, but we don't know that it's not going to be the case.
They're
angry at the situation.
They're usually angry at me for various reasons, but this weekend, that was one of them.
By the way, for anyone who missed it, Brennan Williams was a draft pick of the Houston Texans in 2013.
Right.
And in the third round, 89th player selected overall. and was placed on injured reserve. He had a knee injury during training camp in 2013, was not on a roster last year. He played in the ACC at North Carolina. So, you know, he's a guy who at one point was considered a third round pick, 6'6", 314 pounds, whatever. Bring him in.
Let him compete. What's the negative?
Nothing wrong with bringing him in. At the worst, maybe you found a swing tackle to play either side, or just a backup, or maybe a developmental guy, or maybe he surprises you and he reclaims that form that made him a third round pick. But if that's the only,
it's not going to be the only thing they did.
I'm not saying
it
will be.
You want to go?
I'll go with you right now, man, Mr. Team Corporate over here. All right, from their standpoint, that's what they're afraid of. I would surmise
it's not going to be the only thing they did.
I would suggest it wouldn't be either. But until something else happens, I think that's the nervousness.
So they're angrier that they did something than if they didn't.
I'm not saying it's rational, but they're fearful that, all right, is this the kind of move we're going to make?
Fear not, Mike.
Well,
fear not.
All right, but you're at the same, in the other breath, you're telling us, say, you know, you're going to be disappointed because they're not going to be this lineup of, you know, great players coming through the door.
I said they weren't going to be great. So it's not going to be the names that you think necessarily.
Well,
it's not going to be.
So how many great players we got out there whose names we're not considering?
Who knows?
No, it's an interesting spot for the Jaguars to be. I mean, we talked about the cap keeps
going up. I'm saying
there's
no way to live up to the free agent expectations.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
And we've been talking
about
it.
Make an effort.
How many of those players are even going to be available when it actually gets to free agency? And look, if you look at the last 2 years, I think if you're talking about the caps going up for everybody, so teams like Green Bay may be able to find a way to hold on to Randall Cobb and Brian Bulaga. That's why, look, I get the plan. For the last couple of years, we're going to build through the draft. We're not going to spend money in free agency. Well, now you got money to spend in free agency, and you're stuck in this limbo of, well, where do you spend money in free agency? So is it really the right plan to not spend for 2 years? Or for the last 2 years, should they have been adding pieces here and there that could help them a little bit more, maybe bigger name free agents than they've been doing? Because now they got money to spend, and they got nobody to spend it on, potentially, by the time free agency even opens up.
This email from Jay Stance, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but anyway, he says, if the team, the Jags, don't aggressively approach players in free agency, that will not sit well. If you swing and miss, that's okay. Hashtag try. And I get, you know,
there's no
some people are going to be disappointed no matter what.
There's no question they're going to be aggressive. There's no question that they're going to sign guys. They have targets that they're going to go after. They're going to be players, veteran players at positions starting that are on the roster now. And I'm not trying to throw water on the whole free agency idea. I just don't think it's going to be this all-star big name cast that some people are expecting because of the buildup. So I think it's somewhere between what we're talking about and what Tony said, where there's nobody out there. There are players out there, but I don't think you're going to see Sue and Bulaga and Cobb and, you know, I'm drawing a blank on the Denver tight end.
Julius Thomas.
Thomas on, you know, I think you're going to see them walking in the door on March 11th. That's my only point.
See, like Julius Thomas, for instance. All right, I see what you're saying. So you don't expect the lineup of these guys, right?
Right.
Well, for one thing, most of these guys, or several of these guys, probably won't make it to free agency. I was telling you on the break, I did a couple shows on Sirius this weekend and had a Green Bay Packer reporter on who says he absolutely thinks that they will. They, you know, they've got $26 million under the cap, whatever, something in that range. Because they will carve out a big chunk of money. They'll get Randall Cobb done, in his estimation. Then I said, well, what about Bulaga? And he said, you know, Bulaga loves it in Green Bay. He's just so ingrained in the community. You know, he's in the country club up there. I'm like, well, that's great. I said, we got golf in Florida. Okay, we can sell him on that. But he goes, in his mind, he thinks they'll make a strong play. He can't tell you whether he'll be back or not, but he thinks they'll get Cobb done, and they will try to take Bulaga off the market before free agency opens up. So there's two that you're talking about.
Right.
A couple of Denver
guys.
That's
my only point.
Right. And if that's the case, you move on to the next target, okay? And then the next guy becomes your big name, so to speak, whoever the next guy in line is. But in terms of Julius Thomas, a couple of things. One, you know, people see, well, they offered him $8 million. What does he think he's going to get paid, right? He's already, you know, they offered him a deal that would have put him in the top three in tight ends already. Well, it was explained to me that that offer, which was 5 years, $40 million bucks, $8 million average, that he turned down was when Jimmy Graham was in the process of trying to get classified as a wide receiver for purposes of the franchise tag, and that had that happen, all of a sudden that's going to raise Julius Thomas and every other tight end that splits out wide from the formation, raise their potential earning power. So that's why he gambled on that. It probably will end up in that $8 million range, and both of the guys I talked to from Denver think he is gone from Denver. But one guy brought up the point.
That's right.
Yeah, everyone thinks he's gone.
Graduated at the combine as well.
Sure. Yeah, and one guy brought up the point, though, that his dad, who, you know, his dad took to whatever social media outlet, I forget it was, that to defend Julius and charges that he's selfish and all that, because it almost was like there was a little smear campaign going on. You know, you had unnamed players saying he was soft, he wasn't willing to play hurt. You know, it's me, 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 it's all about the money. Well, all these guys, and I'm not saying wrongfully so, are about the money, but he said his dad, Julius Thomas's dad's favorite team is Oakland. Well, of course, Jack Del Rio went to Oakland. They're in need of a dynamic tight end as well. And he, there are a lot of people apparently in Denver who think he's going to stay in the division and go to the Oakland Raiders. And you look at the Raiders, well, they got nearly as much cap space as the Jags. So in terms of a bidding war, they can go as high as you can if they're willing to.
Yeah, Niles Paul and Charles Clay at tight end are intriguing.
I like Niles Paul a lot. I like Charles Clay. I think he might get overpaid. You know, he's a very good athlete.
Mike, anybody who walks in this door is going to get overpaid.
But I mean even more so, okay?
Except me.
Well, we do it for the love of the game.
I do. Boy, I truly do.
But Charles, you look at Charles Clay. Charles Clay, he had like three touchdowns last year. You know, he's got great athleticism. He's renowned for being one of the fastest guys out there. I think there's going to be a market for him, and I think it's going to overinflate his price. I would put it this way. I'd rather overpay for Julius Thomas, who scored 24 touchdowns the last 2 years. I don't care if he's catching for Peyton Manning or not. He's still got to get open and catch a football.
But again, when you get that overpaid up top, Julius Thomas, you've got to consider, as you said, it doesn't come here, then where do you go next?
Right.
So, again, the names down the list a little bit. Paul with the Redskins, intriguing. Charles Clay, intriguing. There's some intriguing names after.
Do you think Jordan Cameron's off the board because of the concussion issue?
I don't know.
Because to me, he is extremely, in just his play on the field, average over 17 yards a catch for a team with terrible quarterback play. But 3 and 2 years is worrisome.
And that it absolutely is, especially when, again, you've got to close your eyes and envision how it's really going to be. Is he going to be on the field? And that's what you don't want, is a guy who's not on the field.
Anybody talking about Macklin very much? Jeremy Macklin up there? You hear anything? Any speculation whether or not he actually gets the open market?
Not a lot. I would just be surprised if he does. But the names you hear a little more conversation about are Cobb and Smith. Torrey Smith.
Yeah, I mean, re-upping with Baltimore.
But that's not scientific. That's not
right.
That's not combing 15 riders.
It's just the pulse of the league is what it is, a little bit, you know, just from listening to these guys. I mean, there's a lot of feeling that, obviously, Dez and Demaryius Thomas get franchised.
Wide receiver dries up fast.
Right, growing feeling that Randall Cobb re-ups somehow in Green Bay. Then if Macklin's off the board, you got Torrey Smith, who's already expressed publicly that he wants to return to Baltimore.
Call Cecil.
I mean, can we get Cecil Short's agent on the line? You get to that point, you're like, are we even upgrading?
A little intriguing to me.
He's the one other guy.
I always get rocks and garbage thrown at me when I say that, but Crabtree's intriguing to me at the right price.
Yeah, I wonder, we kind of touched on him a little bit last week. Is he the kind of guy, and I don't know if his reputation is deserved or not. He's got a bit of a diva reputation, like a lot of wide receivers, but if he were to come in to go from a team that was on, you know, the brink of a championship just a couple of years ago, to a team that is nowhere near that right now and maybe isn't the focal point of that passing game.
Right.
How's he, you know, and what would you pay to a guy if he's not going to be the focal point? I could see if you bring in Randall Cobb, thinking we got to find ways to create ways to get the ball in his hands. He's going to be our most dynamic playmaker in the passing game for the foreseeable future. I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case with Crabtree.
No, and again, if you don't get a wide receiver in free agency that you want, then you rethink it. You know, I don't think that is the tragedy that some people seem to think it is. They've got good young receivers that they can build and grow around. You're not talking about an absolute vacant position if these guys that we're all talking about in free agency are not available and you go with the guys you've got.
All right, let's take a timeout. 641-1010 if you want to get on board. We'll open the phone lines up to you here in just a second. And tweet us your thoughts on the combine as well. Whose NFL scouting combine performance over the last few days opened your eyes the most, good or bad, but particularly who impressed you, who caught your eye perhaps as a Jaguar target in the first round or otherwise. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. You know what the best thing about Monday is? We're just a day away from Helmets and Heels.
Oh, it's
on Tuesday nights.
It's a great day. I mean, yeah. I think maybe you should combine Helmets and Heels with Wild West.
Helmets?
I mean.
Oh, you mean with Wild West stuff? Yeah. Stay away from my sponsors.
That would be
get
nuts.
Get your own sponsors, you Wild West ladies. Fat Tony show tonight. Spice on with you tonight?
I think so.
I don't know.
He wasn't there last week. I texted him this morning. To see if he's planning.
Didn't get a reply?
Not yet. To see if he's planning on joining me tonight. But either way,
Fat Tony,
I'll
with or
be
without
there
Spice.
For 2 hours tonight from 7 to 9, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot of combine. And
he's got a chance to get that job, no?
Yeah, he's got a chance. I didn't talk to him this weekend. I talked to him late last week about it, but nothing this weekend. So I'm curious to see if he'll be
I hear he's
in
got
there.
A really good chance to get that job.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
I hope so.
More Fat Tony on Mondays then.
I hope so.
I'm good with that.
Can't get enough.
I'm okay with that. We've got Leon Searcy coming on Wednesday morning, unless something comes up in the interim.
In studio?
No.
Okay.
On the phone. That'll make Stoffelis Prime happy. He
one of my favorite Jaguars of all time.
He's a good dude. Leon. One of the, you know, we were talking about free agency, Tony and I, last week. I thought Tony made it was such a simple point. Like, why haven't we all focused on this more? You know, all this talk about you build your team through the draft, and that's great. And in theory, if you can do that and you can draft and develop and you get to a point where it's self-sustaining, that's great. But in the meantime, look at that front four, best unit on the team.
Right.
Across the front, Red Bryant, Cedric Marks, Roy Miller, Chris Clemens, all your starters are free agents.
Don't forget you did it smart, though.
That's fine, but they're free agents.
They're free agents. I don't think there's this perception that they wouldn't have done that in any other position, right? Well, it worked there because Cedric and Marks were out there. They came in. They did better than anticipated when they came in. Then Red Bryant and Chris Clemens were there. Gus knew those guys. They felt comfortable with it. They made smart, wise moves that they knew or they felt good would work because they had been around those guys. So it worked. Circumstances helped it work.
Sure it did. But Paul Posluszny, another guy. I mean, if you're looking at the front seven,
right,
you've got one open spot. We'll pencil in Telvin Smith at one spot, so there's a draft hit. And there's Posluszny, so five out of your seven starters, five out of really six that you have on paper even starting right now, were free agents, and Paul was a pretty big money free agent coming in. So I'm not saying you just go out and that's how you build your whole team. Obviously, you got to have a little bit of both, but I think even Dave Caldwell admitted after the year, you know, we probably went a little too heavy on the draft side of things. Maybe should have sprinkled in a few more veterans, and I just don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
No.
You know, you go out there, the Patriots win the Super Bowl by paying a bunch of money to Darrell Revis and Brandon Browner. And really improved their secondary, which was an Achilles heel for them in the postseason last year against Denver. So, you know, again, it's nice if you can draft a Tom Brady, and if Blake Bortles turns out to be a top 10 quarterback in this league, it's going to make sustaining things a lot easier. But
I'm just not a free agent guy at heart. But
that's fine. Yeah. But, you know, if you're sitting here waiting to draft and develop, Well, every other team's getting draft picks every single year as well, and their guys may be just as good as yours. And if they've got some better players to begin with, you got to draft well, but you also got to sign well too. When you got $64 million in cap space, you can't just build through the draft anymore. You've got to spend some of that money. Let's get a couple phone calls in here. 641-1010. We'll start with Jim this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jim. How are you? Hello, Jim.
I put him on. He must have put down his phone.
He must have disappeared. All right, Jim, we'll try you back in a second here.
He was very eager to come on, too.
Was he? All right. Well, we must have put him to sleep. Jim, we'll get back to you in a second. Michael David Smith of Pro Football Talk, Tyler passes along. I saw this earlier. Pointed out, everyone loves to do this. Anquan Boldin ran a 4.72. He was the slowest receiver at the 2003 Combine. And so the subtext is, see, doesn't matter what you run, you can be great anyway. Sure, that's great. Let's go and look at the slowest receiver every year at the Combine.
Right.
And let's see how many of those guys have careers anywhere close to what Anquan Boldin had. Yeah, you can find examples of that. And I get that. And, you know, Jerry Rice didn't run a 4.4. That's fine. Jerry Rice cheated by using Stickum. We all know that, right?
He ran like a 4.7.
He did. I know. Yeah. I'm with you on that. But I'm kidding about the other part, sort of. You know, people go a little bit crazy about that. He should have. Yeah, so I've been ripping Jerry Rice for the last few weeks. That's been fun. But, you know, people look at that and say, oh, this is not important, that's not important. At some point, athleticism's got to be somewhat important.
And again, there are certain measurables that most teams have for positions that they won't draft it if you're below them, meaning you have to run a certain speed to be corner. It's not a ridiculous speed, but there are certain speeds where they feel like if you can't do this in the 40 or if you don't have this in the 20-yard period, that they do not think that you have the physical tool to play in the NFL.
Dante Fowler had good workout numbers across the board, right? This happens every year, too, okay? Dante Fowler, over the last week, leading up to the Combine, was the guy with the rocket strapped to his back. And this weekend didn't hurt him, right, in terms of the pundits' rankings of him. We don't know if that aligns with the actual decision makers, but John, I think this happens every single year that somebody gets a piece of information that teams like Dante Fowler a lot more than we're indicating should, and then they all catch on, and it hits critical mass, and all of a sudden everyone starts ranking him five or six spots higher than he was just a week ago.
And it certainly helps when you follow that up. That often happens going to the Combine because guys are at the Super Bowl and they're talking about last season. Then they take a vacation and then they have about a week and a half to prepare for the Combine. They call their guys. They get their information. It starts jiving with what they're hearing on Twitter. As you said, a rocket gets strapped to the back and then you go out and you run very, very well, which Fowler did. You look good. You're impressive. He was impressive at the podium. So, yeah, there is a, you know, this year's girl, so to speak.
Right. That's not to say that he's not deserving of it. It's just that there is one of those guys every year.
He was that guy at the Combine this year.
Agreed.
And that's the reality of it.
All right, 641-1010. I think we have Jim back. Jim, you're up on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Please explain to me how you can have a bad cell in St. Augustine. I know it's the oldest city, but... And these newfangled cell phones or stuff, but
the oldest cell towers in the nation, as well. I don't know. What can we do?
Anyway, real quick. One, Jameis Winston looked pretty good. I have to give that, but is he really the Hillary Clinton of football? Because either you love him, if you love him, you love him. And if you hate him, you really hate him. Cause I was reading articles and it's amazing how polarizing this guy is. It is just phenomenal.
I guess he seems to be the guy that really the only people that I think love him are Florida State fans and
the scouts who love him now.
Well, the scouts. Yeah. I'm talking about fans, just from an emotional standpoint, and you know, everybody else seems to hate him. And I think if you feel like he got away with a sexual assault, I think that's understandable. You know, you could feel that way about him if you feel like. you know, he, for whatever variety of reasons, he's certainly a polarizing guy. But the thing that I find funny is if you listened to anything that's been talked about him since he came out of high school all the way through his time at Florida State, was that his football IQ is off the charts, okay? And that, in fact, all around, he's a really, really smart guy.
You can see that, sure.
But people hear him say, we strong, I'm strong, and he doesn't speak the King's English.
Right.
And they're like, this guy's an idiot. And
no, he's not an idiot.
Well, I mean, Stanford accepted him into Stanford.
Stanford didn't accept me, Mike.
No, they right. He could have gone to Stanford, right. And Stanford doesn't drop the requirements down into the gutter for their football players, right? So he's not a smart guy, but then when he shows up and he does everything that they've said he's done for several years in terms of football acumen and dissecting plays, all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's a buzz, it's a story. It's like, it's always been, you're just reinforcing what's always
been
the
case. He might be a little crazy.
He may be. Maybe he is.
If you just watched him on the podium the other day, you might think he's a little bit nuts in a good way. I mean, you know, very engaging. And I say crazy and nuts, I'm obviously kidding. But he, you know, a very engaging guy. You know, if you didn't know anything about him and you're watching him at the combine, very entertained. Obviously knew what he wanted to say there and knew how to sort of be the show. Very comfortable in that situation. You know, we'll have no problem. When a team makes him the face of the franchise, he won't have a problem dealing with the periphery, with the media, with the expectations and all that. I mean, he's clearly ready for that part. Whether he can, you know, stop doing the things that caused all the problems at Florida State, I don't know. But he's clearly ready in terms of he understands what's coming in terms of being the face of a franchise.
Right. He's comfortable being in the spotlight.
Yeah,
in fact,
right.
I think he's an attention hog, to be quite frank with you. You saw the game he was suspended against Clemson. He knew where that camera was at all times, and I thought he played to it on the sideline during the whole game. That's just he is probably a diva who...
That's not an awful thing at quarterback if handled right.
Exactly. Right. If handled right. Right. If you can channel that.
You better want to be the guy. He clearly wants to be the guy. Can he handle all that goes with it?
The state in football history coming up next, the Honda Drive around the NFL as well. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. It is Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
Happy birthday to state in football history to the best player on the Jacksonville Jaguar roster when healthy. Right now.
Derek Martin.
Yes, you know it. I had to do the math. He's 28 years young today, Derek is. Happy birthday, Sin. So I said, oh, what does that make him, 1977? No, it's 1987.
He was born the year I graduated college. That's scary.
Unbelievable. Fortunately, I had not graduated college yet. I was in the throes
but you
of
did,
debauchery.
By God.
Oh, yeah. Eventually. Eventually. Also born on this date in football history. That would be February 23rd, 1943. Fred Biletnikoff. He and Jerry Rice have a lot in common. Both wide receivers. Of Hall of Famers. I'm sure there's something else if I thought for a little bit. 1951, Ed Too Tall Jones was born on this date. Remember his boxing days back in the day? Too tall. And I remember thinking, get on, who can hit him? He's 6'9". Yeah. Just jab him to death.
They hit him.
And also, 1972, Ryan Grigson, who played tackle and guard for the Detroit Lions and now is the Indianapolis Colts general manager, also born on this date in football history. This date in football history brought to you all week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality fencing product for you at a competitive price and give you unsurpassed customer service all the while. And you can get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, according to a team source, the New York Giants will place the franchise tag on defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul if a long-term deal cannot be agreed to by the two sides by March 2nd. JPP has accumulated 42 sacks in his first five seasons in the NFL, including 12.5 last year. He will turn 26 at the end of this month. The NFL Combine continuing today. Defensive backs working out up in Indianapolis. One player who came into the Combine as a potential first-round pick. He had a pretty bad weekend. And he had something to say about it. TCU linebacker Paul Dawson Jr. ran a 4.93 40. That doesn't include his bad vertical leap or any of the other things that he just did not do well in this weekend. He was quick to point out after his workout on Twitter, where I'm sure he was getting some not-so-pleasant comments about his workout, quote, "I'm an awesome football player, the best slash most productive linebacker in this draft, not a track star. Hashtag meet me on the field." Good luck.
By the way, not a track star. Watch the combine right now, turn it on, and you'll see why these defensive backs are not wide receivers. As they're running the gauntlet right now,
Tony.
Yeah,
they don't do this every year.
They don't. I just saw one guy a moment ago just drop three passes that came his way out of about five, and the guy before him dropped four.
That was Landon Collins just went.
Yeah, Landon Collins didn't. Yeah, he dropped one, and the other, there was one out of his reach as well. You want to see if your DBs can hang on to the football. If they get their hands on it, I think more important is, do they get their hands on it? Ronald Darby running the gauntlet right now for Florida State. Shouldn't be a surprise. He ran a 4.32 today. He was a track star in high school. I mean, like a national caliber, track athlete. So shouldn't, I think the 60 might have been his forte. Didn't Herschel Walker run the 60 back in the day in college?
I don't know.
Why do they run the 60? How, you know, I ever think, why did that become
just a little
a
more than the 40?
But, you know, the 60-yard, I don't know. You know, like, I get the 100. It's a nice round number. Why the 60 as opposed to the 50? Whatever the case may be. I don't know. I'll lose sleep over it, I'm sure. Unnamed scout. It's unnamed scout season as well. You talked to any unnamed scouts, by the way, this weekend?
Oh, they had names.
Did they? Okay. Yeah, they, all right, yeah. So you don't have that kind of cachet. You can't attract the unnamed ones.
Well, they're a surly bunch.
Are they a surly bunch? Ones. Apparently, the one who talked to Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I don't know if he's surly or not, but had some pretty strong comments about Jameis Winston. Now, you keep in mind, you don't know what team this guy works for. For all you know, it could be a guy who's scouting for the Titans. He's trying to poison the water. So Jameis Winston falls to the second pick in the draft. So you really don't know. Winston said, hey, people are going to find out what kind of person I am. Character is not what you do when people are around. It's what you show when no one's looking, blah, blah, blah. So the scout tells Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, quote, about Winston, quote, somebody will take him in the first round. But how can you even let the guy in the building? The second law of thermodynamics basically is the more ways something can happen, the more likely it is to happen. That's true of players. The more ways they can screw up, the more chances they screw up. This guy's got a lot of stuff that would lean him more likely to be a bust than a good player. Now, it seems, John, I don't know how many teams interviewed Jameis Winston. How many teams do you think would bother to interview him? If you know you have no chance, do you use one of your 60 interviews just for the curiosity factor, or so you know? Maybe if you're thinking, the Bucks might take him, I'm in the division with the Bucks, I want to find out what makes this guy tick.
Some of that, but you interview to do your due diligence because you just never know when Aaron Rodgers happens.
I suppose.
So
yeah, all right, that makes sense.
And that's why you've got 60 at the combine, I think it is. And then you can pretty much interview at any pro day in a situation like that. It would behoove a GM to have interviewed him. If you're sitting at 15 and you feel like you're in pretty good shape, but all of a sudden this guy starts dropping and you're like, boy, I got a chance to get, you know, a franchise guy. I want to be sure what I'm passing on. I want to be sure what that guy is if he does drop. You just never know.
If nothing happens between now and the NFL draft, I mean, nothing, no.
Winston's going number one.
He's got it right. I mean, almost a mortal lock, it seems, at this point in time, right? Something, again, barring some other character revelation or some other slip up with the law or anything like that, if he keeps his nose clean and keeps his eye on the prize and it works out well for the Buccaneers, almost seems like it's written in stone at this point. What happens if Jameis Winston has an incident, even something that typical? I mean,
you've got yourself a show that day. I know that.
Boy, don't we? come on, Jameis, you can do it. Seriously, I'm not talking about he gets pulled over for going 50 and a 35. If he has some kind of misdemeanor disturbing the peace, could be not a big deal, but whatever. If it's something like that, do the Bucks then go, how the hell, how can we do this? What if he does it the week before the draft? I mean, I'm not saying he's probably going to be on lockdown. I would have him on lockdown if I were his representation. But
I think it greatly depends on how you feel about every other quarterback in the draft if you're Tampa. And that's why you vet a guy like Mariota and maybe Hundley and those guys too, because if something does happen with Jameis that is to the point where you're uncomfortable taking him, and I'm not sure that a misdemeanor would get them to that point. And again,
but
it depends on how
people,
they feel about how they feel about Mariota. You know, if they really like him too, if they feel like those two guys are close and maybe there's something else off field that Jameis does and you're like, all right,
tell you what, if,
we're not dealing
if
with
you
it.
Like Mariota, I mean, if you like Winston, it's awfully hard to like Mariota because they're so different. If you follow, I mean, if you believe that Winston's got the tools to succeed in the NFL and that this is a prototype guy, then it's hard to look at Mariota and feel the same way if you follow me. It's all, you know, so I don't know if you're in love with Winston, if you would also be in love with Mariota. They're so different.
And maybe you wouldn't be. I just, boy, with
Mariota
every,
at the top of the draft is a tough pick.
Everything else that's come down the line on Jameis Winston over the last couple of years, if he were, it's not even about the infraction. It's about the judgment.
Judgment.
Right?
Sure.
If, for instance, if he had shown up at the combine, went through, and everything was fantastic, and then we found out he failed the test, and he tested positive for marijuana at the combine, which is not an issue that we know of that he's ever had. But
right.
If it was something like that, that I don't think the NFL teams care that much about players smoking pot. I think they care if they're dumb enough to get caught at the wrong time. It shows poor judgment. And boy, that would be fascinating to watch the hand wringing that would take place over that kind of circumstance.
Yeah, and I tell you what, the lure of a guy who can play the way he can is so strong. It would have to be something pretty, pretty bad.
So you don't think any kind of misdemeanor, like misdemeanor disturbing the peace, which would obviously show poor judgment, bring into question, does this guy get it? A year after Manziel, Eddie Haskell'd everybody into, I'm Mr. By the Book from this point forward. I'm going to prove it to you. Boy, I there would be an awful lot of pressure on the Buccaneers in that circumstance, I think. Because then, imagine if he did that and then a year later really screwed up. I mean, what a just an absolute laughingstock your organization would be.
Yeah, and if you're the GM, you're still thinking, what guy is going to give me the best chance?
I get
to
it.
Turn this thing around.
I get it, because if you pick a guy who can't play, you could be out of a job in a year or two anyway.
Right. Exactly,
so
right.
I get that.
Because if you can't play, then you're not going to overcome being a good guy.
All right, we'll take a timeout if you want to get in on that. 641-1010, you're welcome to. We'll take a little bit closer look at Marcus Mariota as well. And what is the likelihood that he's either going number two to Tennessee, or would he be there for the Jags to perhaps parlay into some kind of a trade offer? We'll discuss that coming up next. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today continues. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL, Northeast Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, everything from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West will meet or beat any gunshot's price in the United States of America, and that is their guarantee to you. Visit Guns4Jax, that's Guns, the number 4, JAX.com, or stop by on Lane Avenue. Call Wild West Guns and Gold at 693-0777, our Monday sponsor, Wild West Guns and Gold, here on Jaguars Today. Hey, John Travolta, get your hands off my girl. All right? Stop it. I used to be a pretty big John Travolta fan. I still like his work. It's fine.
He looks terrible.
Get your hands off Scarlett Jo. All right? Quit creeping everybody out. And if you're going to let people snap the selfies of you at the gym at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, where you've got no hair, and you show up with that hair last night, I don't know. I don't know if that's the way. I guess, Tony, they got to keep up somewhat appearances.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to go with the full-on rug on top of my head as a dude, I don't know if I'm going to let myself get photographed in my natural state.
Probably not.
That's probably not the way I'm going to go.
Probably not.
Scarlett Jo. Does anybody look better with the little short, call it what you want, like the almost like a Grace Jones look, a little flat top
thing
she had going on? I don't care what she has, what kind of haircut she has.
What did she do last night? Was she the one who introduced
Gaga? I didn't see a thing.
Gaga?
I
think she was.
By the way, I'm going to watch that today. Everybody said Lady Gaga blew it away last night.
She was pretty incredible.
Lady Gaga's always been able to sing. She's got chops. She's just not, you know.
But she did it. It was straight.
Like, right. No, I understand. She came out in like a Julie Andrews dress and did the whole Sound of Music thing.
Nothing kooky about it. She just came out and sang the Sound of Music.
She's turning her whole thing around now, right?
Incredible.
She did the duets with Tony Bennett. Now she's going to turn herself into serious singer person now.
And watching her freak out when Julie Andrews actually came onto the stage was kind of cool, too. I mean, because Julie came out right after all that went on. And watching Gaga just kind of like, I can't believe I just sang that and Julie Andrews is here. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't watch a second of the Oscars. I didn't miss it. Birdman won a bunch of stuff, apparently.
They did, including Best Picture.
I don't have any interest in seeing it. I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me.
Maybe, it was good.
Well, it must be good. It won Best Picture.
It was good. I didn't think it should win Best Picture, but I thought it was very good.
Eh, whatever. To each your own. Yeah. You know what? I was doing the whole Walking Dead thing last night. I'm too set in my ways. I ended up watching so much of the golf tournament yesterday, Tony, because I didn't need to watch NASCAR because I had it locked in. I crushed all of you. By the way,
the whole race, too.
I know. If you didn't get in for Fantasy NASCAR, it's not too late because the way the system does it, the season's broken into three periods, and you drop your lowest score from each of those periods. So if you didn't get in time for the Daytona 500, you can consider that your lowest score and just drop the zero and go on from here. You'll have to be pretty spot on from this point forward. But if you are interested in playing, there's still some spots in the second Jaguars Today League that we opened up. You go to Yahoo. You need a Yahoo profile, which takes you like 2 minutes to sign up. It's free to do. But if you already have one, you go and search for Fantasy NASCAR League 13708, and use the password 1010XL, and you can sign up and go right along, just like J.P. Shattuck did at the last minute.
I know we're going to get back to football here in just
a
second, but talking about the racing in the Daytona yesterday, did you – I know you said you weren't locked in on the race. Did you watch the last 20 laps?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, some of the most exciting racing I've seen down there in a long time, because they raced three wide through the first nine rows at one point for about 12 or 13 laps.
Prosser said it was boring.
Prosser was wrong.
Prosser told me on the radio this morning it was boring.
It was not boring. It was awesome to watch them actually do that. I mean, there was no big wreck until the very end of the race yesterday, which I think
that's what he was waiting for.
Right, a lot of people are waiting for it, but to watch them race that long and you're anticipating the big wreck because there's no way they can keep running that way. But they did, and it was every turn you'd have some car get loose and start fishtailing, but they'd catch it. It was awesome to watch, I thought.
NASCAR is a frustrating thing to watch, I would imagine. If you're really into it, it's frustrating enough for me, and I only watch it for my fantasy stuff, which got me into NASCAR over the last 3 years, and I've watched a bunch of races. I was just really into the golf yesterday, so I opted to go with that, except for the period when Golf Channel – it carries it to like 2:30, and then CBS takes over at 3. So I watched the race for about 30 minutes in there. But, you know, you could be up front with five laps to go, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All of a sudden, you're 16th, you know. Or Earnhardt went
from... Earnhardt got shuffled. He was first, and he wound up getting shuffled back to 15th, and then he worked his way back up
to third
in five laps,
right,
essentially, to third.
Which is cool, because, I mean, that was a complaint a few years ago at Daytona. You couldn't pass anybody.
Right.
So he was able to work his way back out. I like it, man. You know what?
I enjoyed the race yesterday.
If you don't like it, don't watch it. If you do,
it kind of sucked that it went under caution for the last half lap. Like, I would have liked to have seen if Earnhardt, who I thought had the best car in the field, could have pushed Kevin Harvick to something and maybe had a chance to make it a three-car race there on that last turn. Logano's probably going to win the thing anyway, but they threw the caution flag. I was a little disappointed by that. Yep. Having sat there for 3.5 hours watching it, I didn't get the last half lap on Daytona. That was disappointing.
Well, the way the week went, to me, it's clear that Hendrick Motorsports did not sit on their hands all off season and cried that Penske was so much further ahead of him, because they were last year. I mean, Penske just was out. And Joey Logano wins again, but Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson, Dale Earnhart dominated
Casey Kane was up
week.
There for
Casey
a
Kane was running top five for a good part of the race as well. So, There you go. I do enjoy my little bit of
the NASCAR fix.
I do. I do. So 13708 with the Fantasy League on Yahoo. It's the last week you can sign up and still have a chance to get a full-blown score in there. Trust me, other than a handful of us, a lot of people will be dropping their score from the Daytona 500. It's kind of the nature of that race. You know, you're sitting there, Jeff Gordon's humming right along, leading the most laps, and then he ends up 30th in the last few. That's just the way it goes. Let's talk a little bit more about Marcus Mariota here, John. You seem to think there's a, I'm just reading between the lines, that there's a pretty clear divide in your mind, that the gulf is, there's a significant gulf, that it's not razor thin between these guys when you're deciding between Winston and Mariota.
Well, again, I'm a drop back, throw from the pocket guy, so I think there's a gulf. But, and I think most of the league is more comfortable with a guy that is the so-called prototype. If you look at Winston's skill set, you know that that works in the NFL. If you look at Mariota's skill set, you're hoping it works in the NFL. Because this is a kid who has everything else. He's won, he's done this, but you're hoping that what he does fits what you do enough to work in the NFL. You know, the Titans like Mettenberger's style. They like that kind of guy. That ain't what Marcus Mariota is. So in that sense, there's a gulf. In terms of all the stuff that you do at the combine, there's probably not much of a gulf in terms of the interview process. In terms of all the stuff that matters at the combine, they're very, very close. But on the field, what translates to success in this league, being able to win from the pocket, I think there's a gulf.
Tell me if I'm crazy for suggesting that this is a big deal or potentially a big deal. I do think it's a something you have to overcome if you're Mariota, the fact that you only took 5 snaps under center the whole year, okay?
Yeah.
That's one thing, okay? So a lot of people feel that way, though. Winston took nearly 300 snaps under center, you know, so he's more comfortable in that regard. But he brought up an aspect, and I really didn't think about it until...
He being Mariota,
okay. Right. He brought up the aspect that he's going to have to get used to huddling, okay?
Yeah.
And, look, it's not hard. It's not difficult to huddle. But I think, will he have trouble commanding a huddle? Do you know what I mean? I mean, you go up there, you look at a card, and you're barking out a play, and you're snapping it in 12 seconds, right? And there's no time to think, and everybody's in that group. You got a guy who was receiving criticism for his performance with the media on Thursday simply for just kind of being a calm, composed, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, Winston gets up there like he's an alpha guy. You know what I mean? And he's a born leader.
Loves it.
You can hate him. You can love him. Whatever. He's got a charisma about him.
Oh, yeah.
And Mariota didn't exude that, at least at the combine. He's got to have something. You don't play the way he did. Right. You don't have guys follow you. But
everything you hear is and all you can go on is what people who have been around him at Oregon say. And they all say he's got charisma. When you watch their games, they followed him. I mean, they will follow this guy. Now, in terms of huddle command, I think he was talking more just about the functionality of the huddle.
Mechanics of getting
in. Getting a play, getting it done. You know,
he may have been talking about that, but I really want – I mean – You haven't been in that huddle where you've got to look in the eye of these linemen who played for 7-8 years and tell, you know, like Winston, I think, is going to go in there. Like, he gets up there and goes, first thing he says, don't compare me to him. Compare me to Manning and Brady because I'm going to win the Super Bowl next year.
Right.
And
he's got all that stuff that you like to hear from a quarterback. Sort of like with his teammates talk about Blake around here. You know, they like following the guy. They want to play with the guy. They look in his eyes and they see it. All that stuff that you want, they've got, you know. I don't think that's a negative for Mariota, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I just look, it's a small piece of the puzzle.
Right.
All. I'm saying that's the make or break decision.
I think it's hard to win as much, be as successful, and be clearly the leader of a program the way Mariota seemed to be in Oregon and not have a dynamic that people want to follow you.
I guess.
So I would tend to give him the benefit of the doubt on that, I guess.
Do you think there will be a market? Like right now, you don't think the Tennessee Titans, that Mariota is going to be the fit. Now, maybe they get a trade offer, and maybe they trade out of there, and somebody else comes in. But let's say they don't. Let's say it goes Winston and Leonard Williams, right? Top mm-hmm. two guys off the board, and the Jags are sitting there. They don't want Mariota. They might like Dante Fowler the best. We don't know. Do you think there'll be a market, A, and –
I know Dave Caldwell thinks he's going to be in market. I'm skeptical.
Right. Does he think there's going to be one, or does he say, is he thinking, well, the more I say it, the more that will help create it?
It stands to, you know, again, you don't always know this is what, 2 months before this thing plays out. So much can happen. He'd be silly to say, oh, there's not going to be a market. I think there's a better chance that there'll be a market than there was the last couple of years. There's a better chance of a trade than the last couple of years, but I don't think it's as guaranteed as it was when RG3 was coming out in 2012. I don't think it's that sort of perfect storm where you're going to get just a motherload of draft picks.
Keeping in mind that everything...
I hope there is, for the Jaguars' sake.
Oh, awesome. Right. Well, yeah. Tony and I were sitting here on the break a moment ago, you know, saying, what would it take to make you drop the Phillies pick at 20? You know?
Yeah, and that's... I'm not nuts about the idea of moving down 17
spots. See, I have no problem with it. If, depending on, if you were to get back, if you're starting with, let me get your first, second, and third this year and a first next year.
You think Philly's going to be good next year?
Yeah. So but you're still going to get an additional.
A 30?
What's called a 25, right? 20 and a 25 and a second and a third?
To give up your third?
Yeah.
Do you have a third pick?
If your preferred player's off the board.
So he needs big time players, right?
I understand.
Okay.
They need a lot of them, though, yeah. Don't they? You can find big-time players in other rounds other than the first, right?
Boy, I just want to see a guy in here that other players stop to watch.
Okay. I'd like to see five of them. You know, I'd like
easier
to see...
Easier to get that guy in the top three than it is the top 25.
I get it. I just... Boy, I would be much more open to trading than I think Dave Caldwell will eventually be on that score. I guess we'll find out when it all comes out in the wash. But I don't think he's going to be that interested in moving down to 20 necessarily. And everything you hear at this time of the year, you have to take with a major grain of salt. But you like Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets, for instance, he says, hey, talking to people, I get the sense the Jets are not going to take a quarterback with the sixth pick, even if one of the top two is there. Right. If that's accurate, well, who is going to move up? Do they want to move up in front of the Jets? Jets could be lying, or Cimini could be misinformed, or whatever the case may be. And even if you want to jump ahead of the Jets, do you have to jump to three? Do you wait till maybe you go to four, you get a better price, maybe you get a better price at five?
Or does some team stagger it? Do they trade up and then trade up again? Who knows? You know,
possibly.
There's so much that has to happen. Again, I just go back to, usually you hear a lot of pre-draft trade talk, and then tougher on draft day than it actually is. Tougher to do than it is to talk about.
I don't know. A lot of teams make deals on draft day. A lot of dealing gets done on draft day.
Yep.
I think those trades are out there. I think if you look back a few years ago when Gene Smith took Tyson Alualu and he admitted that what was it? Was it San Fran that wanted to move up? It was either San Fran or somebody who moved up to San Fran's spot. It was one pick later. And he got offered basically a fourth-round pick to move back a couple of spots and didn't want to take the chance on missing out on Tyson Alualu. And then if you follow the progression of what Denver did that year, and they eventually ended up taking Demaryius Thomas, and then they traded back in to get Tebow in the first round. But Denver got, like, basically started around the same place the Jags were. They were able to get three or four deals done back to the mid-20s and accumulate so many picks at the time. I think those deals are out there, and I think some – GMs, I don't know about Dave Caldwell because he hasn't made any trade downs yet in the draft, are afraid that they're going to get snaked on the value. Like they draw this bright line that I have to get X. And if I don't get X, and a lot of times to me, Y is a pretty good alternative. I probably would be more open to dealing than
Trader Mike.
I would be. I'd be Trader Mike. Absolutely. All right. We'll come back. We'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you whose NFL scouting combine performance impressed you the most. Maybe it's for the Jaguars, or maybe just in general, some other prospects that opened some eyes over the course of the last few days. You can weigh in on that on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and of course on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. A Wild West Guns of Gold Monday continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Down the home stretch we come. Wild West Guns of Gold brings you Jaguars Today every Monday. Mike Dempsey, the senior writer from Jaguars.com, Mr. John Osier, and the star of the Fat Tony Show. Paul Spicer. No, I'm kidding. Fat Tony, tonight, with or without Spice. You're always spicy, Tony, whether Paul is with you or not.
We'll do an episode of Time Out tonight from 7 to 9. Probably talk a lot about the Combine. Maybe take a look back a little bit more on the Daytona 500 yesterday as well.
See, that was a subtle way of saying call it by the right name, Devsy. It's called Time Out, okay?
That's subtle, Tony. On Tuesdays,
a respectfully subtle way to do it. No, it's Fat
Tuesday.
He talked
right over you on
Tuesday. No, he put me in my place.
Again.
Again, but he did it in a nice way that almost you might not even notice had I not brought it to your attention.
I would have noticed.
Tony's a pro.
Yeah.
He knows how to slam a guy, damning with faint praise and all that good stuff. Today, we asked you, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking Jaguar fans what drives you every day. We asked you whose combine performance opened your eyes the most, who was the most impressive. Tony, what did we get?
Here's what we got from Drew. Kevin White overall. As for Jags' potential first-round pick, Dante Fowler was pretty impressive. From Ronald, Vic Beasley, 35 reps at 225 and a 4.5 40 at 246 pounds is crazy, and he was built like a Mack truck.
Yeah, Vic Beasley, my only issue, I don't watch Clemson week in, week out, but against Florida State, like last year, they just stoned him, you know? And but measurables wise, and you know, he's already projected to be a top 15 type selection anyway, and he just probably solidified that. But yeah, he was a bad man this week.
From Joey, Leonard Williams, that big dude can move. He or Fowler need to be the pick. Hashtag draft the beef. From Jason, Chris Conley, wide receiver from Georgia. Add to those times, numbers, his ability to go get the ball. He's special, and he was a freak at the combine this weekend.
Special athlete.
Yeah, 4.35 40. He had something like a 47-inch vertical. He had like an 11-foot broad jump, essentially. I mean, he measured off the charts athletically, and then I went and looked at his numbers at Georgia. In 4 years at Georgia, he caught 100 passes, essentially. And I'm like, well, can he play? Like my question was, can he play or not? Because athletically, he is. He's a freak, but certainly didn't give him much on the field at Georgia.
And this is the kind
in
of
an offense that throws too. So that's what
they do, right? But although with Gurley, and particularly this past year without Aaron Murray,
they throw enough
dominant. Sure, absolutely.
Right.
They're not Georgia Tech, for instance.
Right.
Where you got Calvin Johnson.
I mean, I watch enough Georgia football that when Chris Conley did that, I was like, what?
Right.
Chris Conley did what?
Yeah, when Mayock says, now we have to go back and look at the tape again, I'm thinking Mayock has never watched a bit of tape on Chris Conley, first of all, because Mayock himself will tell you.
Yeah.
He hones in on who he thinks are the top 100 prospects. But, again, this goes back to my contention. If you watch him on tape the first time, he's playing in the SEC. He's probably not playing against slugs. Either you liked what you saw or you didn't, and now he's going to go run at the combine and make you go look at the tape again. So either the combine can affect this or it can't.
Well, should he not go back and look at the tape?
I get, but my point, shouldn't
you know,
if you're good enough at watching the tape, shouldn't you know if Chris Conley can play? Because they'll all tell you, don't worry, this is the underwear Olympics. This has nothing to do with playing real football. Well, clearly it has something to do.
You're saying what they should do is ignore the tape, miss on the guy.
No, I'm saying that just don't tell us, don't shut it down every year and say that the combine, it's all about the tape. They hold it out there like it's some holy grail that we see things that no one else are able to see, and then they react and they do the same thing everybody else does. The guy blows your mind with this athleticism at the combine, and all of a sudden, Chris Conley made himself a lot of money this week. Well, how? How if it's not going to change his draft status? Because the answer is, it does change your draft
just
status.
Be honest
just
about
be honest.
It.
That's
tell
all
us before the combine, yes, this
it
can
could
affect
impact
the evaluation
your draft status.
Of the player.
Right,
which
that's
is,
all.
It's fine to say. From Duval Doom, we got easily
very angry
Williams. From Nick, Vic Beasley, perfect auto on rundowns and Leo on pass downs. Hashtag unleash the beast. Hashtag made some money. From Josh, Kevin White moved to number one of the wide receivers for me. Hashtag did I tweet fast enough. Hashtag I hate Monday, Wednesday, and Friday classes. Well, you got in, Josh. From Bobby, Chris Conley, wide receiver from Georgia. Not many knew of him before, and now they'll find out. Hashtag go dogs. I got a feeling we got a Georgia fan right
now. You got O'Howard say to the paper today that the bold move to be Kevin White at number three. Is West Virginia a big enough school for O'Halloran? Is he okay with that? Because he took Khalil Mack off the board last year.
I'm curious to see how that may affect things with the wide receivers, because you are talking about a guy. I mean, Cooper was good this weekend. Don't Cooper ran in the low 4.4s. He caught everything thrown to him. He's probably the best route runner in this draft class and deserves the status he had. But you're talking about a guy like Kevin White who runs a 4.35.
He's got a high ceiling. I heard that term a lot.
Right.
High ceiling.
High
ceiling. Low 4.5
terms. And he's
high ceiling.
Bigger. He's a couple inches bigger. He's heavier than Amari Cooper. Like, does the size in combination with everything else you saw, because they were showing some of the tape while he was doing his workout, and he was a really impressive player at times at West Virginia. Is that enough to vault him over a guy like Amari Cooper who's been sitting in that spot for a year now?
Yeah, I've heard the criticisms of him. I don't know. I guess I haven't watched enough of the tape to know. But, you know, that what he ends up doing, he out jumps a lot of guys. Doesn't, despite his speed,
you're allowed to do that.
Isn't a guy who naturally separates from a lot of defensive backs. He put up good numbers when West Virginia played Alabama. He put up really good numbers, and he doesn't get the chance to go up against that kind of defense week in, week out.
So he did it against the SEC?
He did
draft
it against
him.
The SEC.
Draft
Khalil Mack probably did it if he ever had a chance to play against the SEC.
Did you guys catch Byron Jones today?
Byron Jones.
The name
is a combination of Leftwich and Matt is what we got.
And Gerard didn't like either.
Dave said he's the most overrated guy at the combine. No, what did he do today?
Well, Twitter's talking about his broad jump today, which was 12 feet 3 inches in for some perspective. Marquise Goodwin is an Olympic long jumper, and he plays for the Bills, and he jumped 11 feet last year, so he beat that by almost a foot. And if this is true, that would beat a world record set back in 1968.
Huh.
And he also had a max vertical of 44.5 inches, which is a half inch away from the best at the combine. So the guy's really impressing people.
Well, Conley had a 45-inch vertical, I believe, right? Which tied the combine record. He's saying this guy can jump a long way.
There was an Olympic record broken in the combine.
Possible world record.
Awesome. The record was 12.2 back in 68, and he jumped 12.3. And also Byron Jones' notes from Daniel Jeremiah, he says the guy should start day one in a press man scheme.
There you go. Top five?
I don't know.
Is that too high? Top seven?
But I have heard Daniel Jeremiah. He's been raving about that guy for a month now. Jones.
Tony, no need to go back to the tape now. He's confirmed everything.
Now everyone else is going to that tape, son.
They're looking. We didn't notice this broad jump ability on the tape.
Everybody who specializes in broad jump as an Olympic sport is just laying low today.
Right. They're like, what do you do? Is broad jump an Olympic sport? It's not an Olympic sport, is it?
It says, according to Pro Football Talk, it has not been an Olympic sport in nearly 100 years.
Well, that's why it's a record.
Yeah, jump or whatever.
We're going to have the lion fight, too?
They broke the record
of
some guy from 1912.
Well, the record was set in 68.
Okay. Take it!
All right. I'm confused.
Other people, they probably broad jump in other venues, not the Olympics, right?
At the combine, evidently.
For the combine would be your primary place where you're going to find some of that.
The big broad jump event every year.
Fantastic. He shot up. He leapt up boards, did Byron Jones earlier today. All right, Ozone, what do you got coming up on Jaguars.com in the next few days?
Trying to put the combine in perspective and in the rear view, and we'll have Jaguars.com live on Wednesday.
Getting back to the tape before then, I'm sure.
Going to try to talk to Brennan Williams.
Excellent.
See if he's the only guy they're going to sign in.
New Pro Bowl right tackle Jags.
So,
future Pro Bowler.
A lot of catching up. And we'll have our draft trackers. And the thing we're looking forward to is going to Randy Gregory's Pro Day next week.
Oh, is that next week? Skinny arms, right? By defensive end standard.
Yeah.
Right? It just looked to me.
You'll get a side shot, and I can show you some real skinny
arms. You got
arms
the guns.
I'll get next to him, and see some really skinny arms.
You have average to above average writer arms.
I do not.
Oh, you do?
I have below.
No, not writers. Are you kidding me? All that typing, man, that builds up those forearms like a madman.
My, I'm right hand centric when I type, put it that way.
Oh, are you? Yeah, I'm three finger centric when I type. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks for playing along. Jaguars today, we appreciate Wild West Guns and Gold for bringing you the show every Monday. We've got XL Primetime coming up next, so stick around for John Osier, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato. I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll be back with you tomorrow, right here again, live from Everbank, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.